Let's do 24.
Utsi de yuri me lokaha. Nakuryam karma chedaham. Sankarasya chakarta syam. Upahanyam ima prajaha.
Utsi deyuhu ime lokaha na kuryam karma chet aham sankarasya chakarta syam upahanyam imaha prajaha. Krishna is still talking to Arjuna, teaching Arjuna about why as a wise person or as a karma yogi, but especially now just as a wise person, somebody who has jnanam, why they should stay in the field and do their dharma, stay in their life and do their dharma, if that's their prarabdha, if that's what's expected of them, how important it is to stay in the field and do what is expected of you. And Krishna gives the example of himself saying, you know, in all the three worlds, there's really nothing at all for me to accomplish. And yet I stay doing what is expected of me with energy. So, and so now he's talking more and more to Arjuna. I stay. In the previous verse, he says, "If I were not to remain." You know, doing my karma with energy, then the people, hey Partha, he said, the people, they would follow my path. They'll follow what I'm doing, because I'm the Shrestha Purusha. I'm the person who's respected in this loka, so highly respected, Shrestha Purusha, so highly respected. And then I set an example for them. And what if the example I set for them is doing nothing? So in this verse he says, Utsi deyuhu ime lokaha nakuryam karma chet aham. If I should not do karma, that kuryam is a potential first person. If I should not do karma, nakuryam karma chet if. So aham nakuryam karma. If I should not do karma, ime lokaha, these people, all of these people, utsideyuhu, these people would perish. Utsideyuhu means to perish. All of these people would perish. Sankarasya chakarta syam. I would be, potential first person again, I would be the karta, the agent. Karta means the doer, the one who's the agent. I would be the agent of Sankara. Sankara means confusion, of disruption, of confusion. I would be confusing everyone. And upahanyam imaha prajaha. And I would be the one who destroys, I would bring about destruction, I would destroy these people. So he says, I would destroy these people. He doesn't mean I would physically destroy the people, but I would confuse their buddhi. And if you remember in this verse, we had some time ago, I just want to find that verse because it's, this is one of those verses to memorize. In this, it's really this verse in chapter 2, 62 and 63, where he says, you know, a person, it starts out just saying, you know, a person who's kind of fixed upon different vishayas, that this object or that object, where you're walking by and you kind of get a fancy for it, you're kind of fixed on it, and you start thinking about it. And the more you think about it, the more there arises what we call sangha, an attachment. Like, I would really like to have that. That would really make me happy. So this type of progression starts. And then he says, and from that, just that attachment where my mind just keeps rotating around this object in a desirable way, what we call, I become attached to it. And from that attachment, kama is born. Kama means raga dvesha. The raga side is, I want this so that I can be happy. That would be great to have that. That would really make me happy. This, I really want this. That's sangha, you know. And I really don't want anybody to take it away from me either. That's also sangha. That's the negative side. That's that attachment is there. But then if that kama is that desire is thwarted, when the desire is thwarted, we get krodha. So when we think, krodha means anger. So from the kama, from the desire, the thwarted desire, that desire actually transforms itself. It's not like the desire says it stays. The desire stays, but in another form. The desire now becomes something which is filled with krodha, filled with anger or irritation, or all of the negative spectrum can come then because of that thwarted raga. Raga means, you know, a binding desire. Binding means I need to fulfill this desire in order for me to be happy. So the object of the desire is equated with my happiness. That's a binding desire. And when that is thwarted, then I will become angry. And from the anger, out of the anger, comes some moha. It means once the anger overtakes you, your mind starts doing all kinds of things. It's kind of working, it's working out of the anger. It's not that I am controlling the anger is controlling me. So that's the sammoha. And then from that sammoha, when that delusion comes, the smriti goes. Smriti means that memory, my dharma, what are my duties, what is proper behavior, all of that goes out the window. So all of my training, all of my culture, everything that mommy and daddy taught me, how to be a good person, that is gone. What is overwhelming me is the crow to the anger. And so once the smriti goes, then he says there is buddhinashaha. That buddhinashaha is the destruction of my buddhi, of my knowledge. The buddhi is the one that's the carrier, really, of dharma, adharma, what is to be done, what is not to be done. And then once that goes, that from that buddhinasha, the person is destroyed. The human being is destroyed. Because what separates us from really all the other beings in the world is this buddhi, the freedom to choose between the dharma, the free choice between dharma and adharma, just that freedom to choose. It's a huge responsibility in a way. It's not like my instincts are not guiding me, you know. I'm not just free to follow my instincts. If I follow my instincts, what about my free will, you know? So the instincts don't work in that they're not my teacher. The instincts aren't my teacher, right? So I need to be taught. My free will needs to have some sort of structure. And if it has no structure at all, then the buddhi itself, the buddhi without smriti, without any structure, that one that kind of guides me, that helps me to make my decisions, to follow dharma, all of this, that buddhi then becomes destroyed. And if the buddhi is destroyed, what makes me a human being is destroyed. Because now I have no one inside to kind of drive the chariot. Do you remember that example? Because now the charioteer has been destroyed. If the buddhi is destroyed, then the chariot is just going off on its own. Whatever way the horses go, that's... You can imagine, you know, the charioteer, the one who's the master of the charioteer, of the chariot, sitting in the back. The buddhi is gone, you know. The chariot driver is gone. The horses are just going. The reins are flying all over the place. And then the master of the chariot is just taken for a wild ride with absolutely nothing to say about it. No buddhi is there. So now here in this verse, that's exactly what Krishna is referring to. And he says, if I, who am the Shrestha Purusha, stop doing all of the dharmas that you've been taught to do, all of the rituals, all of the values, you know, all of the responsibilities, all of the duties, Swamiji uses the example for Jnani. It's because it's really interesting when I'm studying this, because I just remember when I study Swamiji's commentary on the Gita, he's the one that wrote all of these, and he has all of these examples, and I think, oh, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And I see him so much in all of these, in his writing, you know. So what he says is something that he always, always has done. Whenever there's in the temple, if there's a celebration or a special puja, or it's, you know, and in India, almost every day, maybe two-thirds of the days are special. There's a special ritual, a special puja that's being done, or it's Krishna's birthday, or Shivaratri, or there's something happening. So a puja is being done. Swamiji will always go to that puja. You sit there, you'll attend the entire puja, be there, you know, participate in it, and then leave. It just automatically does all of these things. If there's some sort of celebration, Swamiji will go, sit there, and be part of it, you know. There's a marriage, or if there's some sort of a child is getting upanayanam, Swamiji will always be there because he's always participating. He makes a point to participate in the dharma and the culture of the people. You know, he would probably, it'd be just as well be at home in his room studying his books. He would love to do that, you know, or just teaching a class. But this is of equal importance. He's a Shrestha Purusha. And so the way that he behaves in the world and behaves to others, and how he upholds the tradition, how many temples has he gone to bless, and how many things has he done all over India in order to bolster the culture, to protect the culture. Even so, went so far as building all of these 10 or 12 huge temples on movable temples, you know, on big wheels. Huge temples on big wheels, and then people would, you know, hundreds of people, I guess, as I've understood, would pull this huge temple to different areas in the location. So he had several of these built and reestablished that beautiful tradition where the temple and the pujaris and everybody would be in the temple, and the pujas and everything would be being taking place in the temple, and then the people, there would be a procession of people with all of the instruments, and thousands of people literally walking behind as this procession is going on. So he wanted to reestablish the culture. He wanted to, that was an ancient culture in that area in Tamil Nadu. It had died. He wanted to bring that culture back. Why? Because he wanted to see a bunch of temples being pulled around by people. No. He wanted so much to bring to life the culture, you know, the Vedic culture that was holding, the Dharma that was holding all of the people for the Loka Sangraha, for the protection of their Dharma, for the protection of their Buddhi, to give that beautiful structure. And without that type of support from the Shrestha Purushas or for the enlightened beings, the ones who are looked at as being the pinnacle of what the Vedic culture has to offer, if they get knowledge and then just go sit, you know, say, oh, now I have knowledge, okay. And then I just sit, then there's no guidance for the people, there's no participation. And so very often you see somebody like Swamiji who really doesn't have to do anything at all. And would be very happy. I think I told you all once that Swamiji, one time we were sitting in his kutir. This was when he was quite young. I think he was in his early 40s, 40, 44, 45. Because I had not been to India for that long at that time. So he was sitting on his little bed. It was a regular little single bed that had a cover over it and some bolsters behind it. So that's where he slept. And then during the day, that was his couch. And so he was sitting on this couch in this nice little, you know, small, nice little room. We were having satsang there, and there's probably about 10, 15 people in there. And he was just musing and sitting, and he said, you know, I could really sit here forever. I don't feel any need to go anywhere at all. I could just be here, you know. And I realized that when he said it, I realized that was really true. He would be just fine just being here. Everybody would bring his food to him. He You know, and he would just sit, people would come and go, and he would just sit here and then, you know, take a shower and then sit here some more. Yeah. Then it would be time to go to bed, you know. Then he would go to bed and get up in the morning and sit some more. And actually, he did quite a bit of sitting because he taught all of these three-year courses. So many three-year courses, and he just sat there, you know. People would come and go, come and go, and come and go. And then he would go and teach and come and sit in his little kutir and then teach, sit in his little kutir. And then when there were temple things going on or celebrations, he would always go to those. If somebody was getting married, he would always go to the wedding and bless the wedding, you know. When there was a special event, one of his devotees was opening a new business or something like that, he would always want Swamiji to come and bless it. He would always go and bless it and participate in those rituals. Always, you know. He was a Shrestha Purusha. He was somebody who wanted to help the people. It's not that he wanted to get anything out of it. I'm not going to the wedding so that I can have a great time. I'm going to the wedding because that's what should be done. That wedding needs to be blessed. You know, I'm participating in the culture in a way that is beautiful and meaningful, and so. That's what he naturally did that. But say the Shrestha Purushas just sit and don't do anything, then that becomes the role model, because this is the person who I look up to. This is my guru. It's the person that I look up to. What does he do? He sits. That's all he does is sit. He doesn't participate in the Dharma. He doesn't encourage the Dharma, the rituals that are to be done, and the Dharma, the way to treat others, how that is all to be done. He's kind of a non-participant because he's just with himself, which is beautiful, you know. But then that's what I want to do. That was what Arjuna was thinking, you know. Let me just go, leave all of this, and just go sit under the tree and just be with myself. And then Krishna, you can come and sit under the tree with me. You can teach me, you know. That's what he wanted to do. And Krishna could say to him now, in teaching this Gita, hey, Arjuna, look at me. Look at how busy I am. I am doing so many things, you know. So many things. Why? Loka Sangraha. To help the people, you know. It's not that he has a raga dvesha to help the people. That's just the Dharma. That's what you're called upon to do. You shouldn't let the people walk away with this sankara. Sankara is this state of confusion, not knowing what should be done and what should not be done. So that these people, when he says these people, all of them will be destroyed because they'll lose that central figure whose behavior is an exemplar for all of them. Okay, so that's his idea as he's talking to Arjuna. So let's do this next one. Oh, 25. Where were you? I think we're on 25. Sakta.
Sakta karmam yavidvamsaha yatha kurvanti bharata kuryat vidvamsatha saktaha kuryat vidvamsatha saktaha chikirshu loka sangraham
Saktaha karmani avidvamsaha yatha kurvanti bharata kuryat vidvan, there's a similar there, kuryat vidvan tatha asaktaha chikirshuhu lokasangraham. So it gives another, still trying to explain this to Arjuna. He says, Saktaha karmani avidvansaha yatha kurvanti bharata. Hey bharata means, he says, just as Those people who are saktaha means they are attached to their raga dvesha, filled with binding desires as opposed to asaktaha. So those people who are still samsaris, they're still ajnanis, they're still bound to their raga dvesha, still performing actions so that I can be happy, let me have this. They have that karma pala hetuhu, means if I do this, I will get that. If I do this action, I will get that. That's why I'm doing this. I'm doing that so that I will get that. So that's that karma pala hetuhu, the one who takes themselves to be the cause of the result. Because if I do it, I should get that, right? If I do it, I should. So then I'm responsible for getting that. I should be the one who brings that about. So exactly what Krishna said, don't ever be a karma pala hetuhu. I am the karma pala datta. Krishna says, as Ishwara, I am the karma pala datta. You be the one who does the action. You're adhikara. Your qualification is for the karma, to do the action. Let me be the karma pala datta, the one who gives the fruits of the action. That way, if you let me be the karma pala datta, then you have a different attitude. You accept the results of those actions with that prasada buddhi is coming from me. And even here he says, the last thing he says, don't become somebody who doesn't do action. Don't become somebody who doesn't do the karma. Right there he's saying, you know, even for the one, the mumukshu, the karma yogi, don't think because I am the karma pala datta, the giver of the fruits of the actions, that you should just sit back and do nothing. You know, don't do that. You do the karma. You do the karmas which are enjoined upon you. You do the dharma, you do the karmas, you do the rituals that are being asked of you because you're not a sannyasi yet. So whatever your stage in life is, whether you're a brahmachari, or you're a grahasta, or a vanaprastha, or if you're a sannyasi, there's certain karmas enjoined upon you. Okay? Those karmas you do. Okay? But you do the karmas, that's your adhikara. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to do the karmas, but let me be the karma pala datta. Mm-hmm. Don't think that you're the one who is responsible for the fruits of the action. You know what you want. Everybody has a reason for doing a karma, you know. But that doesn't necessarily mean that things will work out in the way that you had planned. Because there are many, many, you know, steps between the cup and the lip. So many things can happen. on your way to, you know, getting this desired result. You really don't have the control over it. Therefore, have that prasada buddhi. Let me be the karma balatata. Receive what comes as something directly from Ishwara, because Ishwara is the one, the laws of Ishwara are the ones that are involved in getting that karma pala. You know? And so, that being a fact, that's the fact of it, then how should I receive those karma palas? If I have Shraddha in Bhagavan, karma pala is coming from Bhagavan, all the laws of Bhagavan, then be happy, you know. If you take it as prasada, that prasada buddhi, then I accept that, whatever that is. I may take other actions to get the same thing in another way, but it doesn't matter. I still have that prasada buddhi. That prasada buddhi is really what allows me to be participatory in the creation and to have the shanta, have the shanti, that is natural to my being, and so I feel happy. I feel happy when I'm being myself. I don't feel happy when my mind is being overridden by raga dvesha and the krodha, the anger and upsetness and all that that comes along when all of my binding desires are thwarted. So here he says, just as those who are attached, that the ajnanis, the ones who don't have self-knowledge or are not mumukshus and don't have that prasada buddhi, so just as they, the avidvans, not having self-knowledge, vidvan, right, is somebody who has self-knowledge, so the avidvans, just as those who don't have self-knowledge are attached to their karmas, just as they do those karmas being attached, having self-ignorance, being attached to the karmas, means may this action, may this desire fructify and make me happy. Okay? So just as the avidvans perform their karmas and do their karmas, even though for the result, they're saktaha. He says, just as they do that, he says, kuryat vidvan tata. Similarly, the one who has self-knowledge, the vidvan, they should do similarly, tata, the vidvan, that vidvan being asaktaha, unattached, they should do karma. They should also do karma in the same way as the avidvan does karma. The difference, though, is that they are asaktaha. Their desires are not binding. And so why would they do it then? So he says, chikirshuhu. Chikirshuhu is a desiderative for kri. Means because they want lokasangraham. Without abiding in a desire, they want that lokasangraham. They do it for the protection of the people. For the protection of the, it's really the protection of dharma. To hold the dharma, to be an example of dharma, of proper behavior, and to be a role model for the people. Instead of gaining knowledge and being completely free, I just do what I want. But the knowledge that you have and the mindset that you have is not at all the mindset that an ajnani has. It is simply not the same. That's why, you know, Krishna trying to explain to Arjuna, you know, how to explain a wise person, because that's what Arjuna wanted. Just give me a description of a stitta prajna, a stitta dihi, of somebody who really has this knowledge. Just give me a description of that. And so really, all Krishna found that he could do was to describe, in a sense, their values, but he couldn't really describe what's going on there inside, you know, the freedom inside, the mind that is free because everything that I had sought in life I discovered is my own nature. That all of these things that I've run after, one thing after another, really to make me happy, I've discovered that those things really have nothing to do with the happiness other than the immediate fulfillment of my desire, any desire. The immediate fulfillment of your desire gives you a shantavritti. If I really want something, I fulfill that desire, what happens is that at that moment when I fulfill the desire, my mind is free of desire. You know, not for very long. But for that moment, when you fulfill a desire, your mind is desireless. You have the mind of a Mahatma. It just is there. And flooding that mind is the ananda of your, is reflecting off of that mind is your own being, and it gives you this wonderful experience of ananda. It's just a beautiful shantavritti. And that shantavritti is created by the fulfillment of a desire, which all of a sudden you don't want anything because you just got what you wanted. It's very simple, right? I just got what I wanted. I don't want anything. It takes me, give me a few minutes before I think of the next thing. You know, just give me a few, it could really be a few seconds, but give me a little bit of time, you know. So just you know, so good, wonderful, beautiful. That happens over and over again. So we believe in desire. We believe in desire. We believe in going after our desired objects, because every time we're successful in fulfilling a desire, I get this wonderful desireless state, a wonderful shantavritti, and I am so happy, I'm so pleased, all is well with me, you know. But it's such an illusion, because the vritti, I had the desire that created kind of the stress and the tension and the single-pointedness. When that is resolved, my mind is quiet. My mind is quiet, I have a shanta vritti. Nothing is in the way, there's no experience that's in the way of my own being. So that shanta vritti, you know, reflects me, and I feel so at home. So everyone, until they have self-knowledge, is really running after desires, because they don't even know until it's pointed out that what is actually, how that is, what the psychology of that is. What's the mechanics of that whole thing? So they will just think that I wanted that so badly, now I have it, thank you. My whole buddhi, everything is now focused on that object of desire, which has made me happy. And I knew it would make me happy, and now it is making me happy. So that object of desire becomes the source of my ananda. So I become very attached to it. And I also become attached to my desires, because I've had many experiences where the fulfillment of a desire gives me really the happiness. But I think of it as the object of the desire is giving me the happiness. So now, see how the mind works. It's such a wonderful illusion. It was so painful. I really wanted you, okay? And now I have you, okay? So that was so, so good, and I'm so, so happy. What a release. What ananda. How much beauty can there be? But we also need to have this. Okay. So let's go after that, okay? Now we go after that. Okay, we need to have this. And then we're doing all that we can to get it, and all this, these obstacles and everything are in the way, and this comes in the way, and this comes in the way, but these people are helping me, that's wonderful, and this is happening. And so I get that. Okay, now. Ah, wow, that was wonderful. We got that. I'm so happy. This is so wonderful. We have this, and we have this, you know? But... And so it goes on, and it goes on, and it goes on, and it goes on, until you, at some point, you realize, this isn't going to stop. This isn't going to stop, because actually, the ananda, you start to realize, the ananda keeps dripping off the objects. I get the objects, I keep the objects, the ananda drips off, you know. And then I just have the object. And then I have to get that ananda by getting another object. That one shines at me. I've got to get that. It can be so many things. I mean, it's not one thing. It's anything in the creation can light up in that way. Then I need that. We need that in order to be, you know, happy now. That's samsara. This is exactly what samsara is. And so the people, except for a person who has self-knowledge, the people are saktaha. Means these raga dveshas are real, because the ananda, they're real in the sense that I have superimposed my ananda onto these objects, and so therefore that I need to make me happy because of the superimposition of the experience of ananda on the object. And so of course I need that. If the superimposition is there, then that's not a joke. I really do need that. The problem is, I don't know at all that it's a superimposition. All I know is that I need that object to be happy. That's what's making the world run. That's how the whole thing is working. So Krishna says, so just as the avidvans, the people that don't have self-knowledge and are saktaha, means they have these binding desires, you know, just how they perform karmas. Similarly, in the same way, you as a vidvan, as somebody who has knowledge, you should also perform these karmas. It's just that you are asaktaha. Your desires are not binding. You're doing it for a different reason. You're doing it for dharma. You're doing it because in your situation, with your set of responsibilities, this is what is expected of you. And if you shirk your responsibilities, if you shirk your dharma, it will confuse people. You need to do what is asked of you, what Bhagavan is asking of you, what your prarabdha karma is asking of you, for the loka sangraha. Because jikirashuhu, because you yourself want to, a person, a vidvan, will want to protect, will want to do the loka sangraha, will want to do what is good for the people. Because that's what's human. It's a human thing to do. We see this in human beings all of the time. Like when somebody, I've noticed in so many different instances, like if somebody has suffered a loss, or if they've had a child who I know for my some of my family, a child was born that had multiple dystrophy. It's a disease that you can be born with where you lose the function of all of your muscles. It's a really kind of a very terrible disease in a way, and you eventually die when you're usually before 20 or so, you'll pass away. And so these family members had done so much to help their child and get everything that they needed for the child, you know, to try to cure it, to try to do everything they could, you know, to somehow make it better. So what did they do? Their child did finally run 20. The child died. But all the while, everything that they learned that made life easier, that was helpful for their child, you know, they couldn't but pass it on to the other people, you know, who had children that were suffering from this. And so all of the group, you probably have seen this, if somebody has an ailment or is suffering for something or their family is suffering, they will do everything they can to help others that are in the same boat, because they know what it is, you know, to have to carry to the difficulties and the emotional difficulties, and also all they want to do is help, you know. But it's the same for all of us. When you discover something that helps you, that really helps to ease the burden or to make you happy in some way, or even yoga makes such a huge difference. So say you've realized how much yoga itself has helped you, has given you shanti, has put your body into balance, has given you much deeper sense of well-being, even in the body, in the prana, even in the energy, in the mind, the natural shanti in the mind. It helps so much. And so what do you want to do? You want to help others. You want to give it to others because it helped you, you know. Even like for me, this one of the things, of course, Vedanta is such a blessing, that it's something that if you're able to pass it on, you feel so blessed and so happy to be able to do that. But there's all kinds of little things. There's all kinds of little things in Vedanta that help so much. Just like the inner friend. I pass on the inner friend to everybody. All of my students, all of my clients, even my nieces. Everybody gets to learn about the inner friend. You know why? It's because when I first met Swamiji and first at the ashram, he taught me that. And it changed everything for me. Just that I hadn't really gained this knowledge yet. It was just starting. But that changed the whole, my whole sense of well-being. Changed the whole interior space. When I learned that, and it changed it very, very quickly, because now instead of having nobody inside and having just to depend on the environment somehow or somebody to say something, the right thing, I had that person internally. And so my mind just transformed so beautifully. This wasn't Vedanta, this was this inner friend. So now I will always talk about the inner friend, right? Because it helped me so much, right? And then I get letters from my students at school, and I hear from my clients. What made the most difference for them? What did they learn? It's two things: inner friend and inner child work. But inner friend is because it's so simple. So all I'm saying is that you want to. You're a human being. This is what is natural to us. It's natural to us to want to help others the way that we've been helped. It's natural, it's just a flow. It's a natural flow. And so say you're asaktaha, you've gained this knowledge. You know the importance of dharma. You know it. You know the importance of dharma. You know the importance of that karma yoga buddhi. You understand it. Now you have knowledge and you're in a position of, as somebody like Arjuna or somebody like Krishna, you're in an important position. Do you not want to help the others? It's not even something to think about. You will naturally want to help the others. And so to gain that shanti. First shanti, the worst shanti, let's say the worst shanti, the little minuscule dots of shanti, you know, are from raga dvesha, fulfilling your desires. Those are the little bleeps, you know, the little bleeps of shanti here and there, with surrounded by a lot of pain, because you have no control over it. Dharma is something that Bhagavan has given, the Dharma Shastra, the whole Karmakanda, the passing on from mother to child, from the Shrestha Purushas, from the teachers to their students, that understanding of Dharma. Dharma gives as for a non-mumukshu, for a samsari, Dharma is what gives the most shanti and the most, it gives relative shanti, but it's a long-lasting shanti. I have control over Dharma. I can do Dharma or not do Dharma. Dharma doesn't depend upon what happens out here. It happens about my attitude, that I do what is right, what is being asked of me in the situation. That is Dharma. And so the whole Karmakanda is really a Dharma Shastra. How to have the maximum amount of happiness in this relative world, relatively. Dharma. And so Dharma is taught throughout. But it's taught for the samsaris. If you have raga dvesha, you know, there's all these rituals and things that you can do to be able to satisfy those desires that you have. But never give up Dharma. Dharma is always the underlying principle, because if the Dharma is there, your mind will have that underlying relative shanti. And from that mind that is Dharmanishta, is committed to Dharma, for that mind, there's a natural space for that mumukshutvam, for that mumukshutvam to arise, because you have inner space. Your mind is not so extrovert. Let me have this, let me have that, let me do this, let me do that, so I can be happy. Here you already are relatively happy because of the shanti Dharma gives you. And so that Dharma is really responsible for the mumukshutvam to rise. And when the mumukshutvam rises, then what are you taught? You meet your teacher, and then you're taught that karma yoga buddhi, which is really just a step in from Dharma. Just a step in from Dharma. Now everything is still, let my primary commitment be Dharma. Let my raga dveshas always be within Dharma. But now I'm seeing Dharma really as the very structure of Ishvara, the very laws of Ishvara. Ishvara himself is the Dharma. And then I understand, I'm taught this karma yoga buddhi. Let me do all of my actions, you know, with that prasada buddhi. When I do all the actions with that prasada buddhi, then now I have another level of shanti. Because now my actions, the raga dveshas, I'm not doing the raga dveshas anymore, really for the result of the action. I have that non-binding desire. I'm doing all of these actions with that prasada buddhi. In fact, the raga dveshas fall off completely, and then I'm just doing what I find to do here with that prasada buddhi. That gives me so much shanti that I'm almost have the mind of a jnani. It's just that I don't really know completely myself. The kartritvam, the doership, is not yet gone. And then, as I gain knowledge, the sense of doership itself goes as only Ishvara here. Any doership is just mithya. I'm really just here living out the Bhagavan's life and doing the life as it unfolds, and living the life as it unfolds. So whatever is given here now, this is what is Dharma, is very clear. That's just what I do. So here, now he's telling Arjuna, you just do, you know, you do all of the things, you do your karmas the same way that an ajnani does. Ajnani has attachment, is doing it so that I can be happy. You're doing it, same karmas, but without that attachment. You're asakta, means they're all non-binding desires. And why are you doing it? Because for you, for ajnani, why shouldn't I do it? It's what is helpful for the people, you know. Why wouldn't I do it? Why shouldn't I do it? It's because it doesn't make any difference to me whether I do this or I do that. This is what my dharma is here. This is what is helpful for the people. And so for that loka sangraha, for the protection of the dharma, for the well-being of the people, you do your dharma. So he's really trying to help Arjuna to kind of get back into being the Kshatriya that he is in this very intense situation, recognizing, you know, you can do anything. You're asakta. It doesn't really matter. You can do or not do. Why would you choose to do? Because if your ananda is not at stake, you do it or you don't do it. But then what about the people? What is good for the people? That's why you do it. So he says that. Let's do this, this last verse. 26.
Nabuddhi pegan janayet. Ajnanam karma sanginam. Josheyet sarva karmani. Vidvan yuktasamacharam.
Na buddhi bedam janayet. Ajnanam karma sanginam. Josheyet sarva karmani. Vidvan yuktaha samacharam. So the, he says, the vidvan, the who's a yuktaha, the vidvan, that one who has knowledge. The yuktaha means has that nishta, jnana nishta, the jnani. So that vidvan yuktaha, na buddhi bedam janayet, should not confuse, do buddhi beda. Beda means to kind of divide a person's buddhi, like, what is this? Should I do this? Should I do that? Where I lose my clarity. I don't know any longer what to do. So the jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, should not produce that type of disturbance, should not produce any disturbance in the mind of the ajnani. For an ajnani, you know, who has that attachment to karma, don't disturb them. This is within their vaidikas. So Krishna is talking for the vaidikas, those people who are held within the Vedic vision. Don't disturb them. Let them do their karmas. Let them do their dharma. They don't have self-knowledge. They are attached. They do have binding desires because they don't yet have self-knowledge. And so a desire is going to be binding because, of course, I want to be happy. And I think this will make me happy. So this is the binding desire. But don't disturb them. They're not mumukshus. You know, they're not mumukshus. They haven't realized that there's something wrong here, something not working here. They haven't seen that yet. So just leave them, let them be. Don't disturb them, he says. Then don't disturb them. Yourself doing all of the karmas that are there means all of the enjoined karmas, doing the things that are expected of you because you're living in the world. You haven't taken sannyasa. If you were to take sannyasa, be a wise person who took sannyasa, then live the life that is expected of the sannyasi. That's also, the sannyasi has taken a ritual which has given them that sannyasa. And that sannyasa has certain constrictions. It's constricting for somebody who still wants to do things in the world. The sannyasa for somebody to take sannyasa, they should really have a sannyasa vritti, which means I don't really want to do anything except study and be with myself, and I can teach and study and contemplate. And so sannyasa, that sannyasa is for that. And all of the people, they are not confused by that. You're wearing the orange, you've been given in that sannyasa, and you're living the life of a sadhu. And so that's inspiring for all of the people. But say you're wearing orange and then you're going to a bar and drinking. Now, that's confusing. That's confusing because that's not what is expected of a sannyasi. They're living outside of the sannyasa dharma. That's why the taking sannyasa or taking that's not a joke because you're wearing bright orange. So everybody knows you are a sannyasi. And everybody knows who a sannyasi is. A sannyasi is a wise person, you know. And what a sannyasi does is they sit, you know, and they teach and they study and they contemplate. That's what they do, and they do good for other beings, right? They live within their dharma. And so even if you go to the sannyasa, you still have expectations. If you stay as a grahasta, like Arjuna is a grahasta, who's a kshatriya? He definitely has expectations, you know. And he's also a Shrestha Purusha, so people look up to him. How does he handle his life? You know, how does he treat others? How does he hold his dharma? How does he hold his responsibilities? He's a Kshatriya Grahastha. Certain expectations are there. He's a Shrestha Purusha. Everybody looks to him for that. So now Krishna says, you know, a wise person, You know, you're doing those karmas in order to not upset, you know, the mind of an ajnani who is living within the Dharma and, you know, wanting to gain happiness from doing the rituals, go to Swargaloka, whatever it is that an ajnani wants to do. Don't upset the apple cart there. You know, let them live within that Vaidika Dharma, which actually will bring them maturity and will bring them shanti. That's what it's for. The Vaidika Dharma is Dharma, right? The Karmakanda is full of Dharma. The way that I treat others, the way that I treat my family, you know, the way that I do rituals and yajnas for the gods so that I'm participating in the creation, you know, all of the expectations that are laid upon me, all for the sake of Dharma, and so people are contained in that. Don't divide their buddhi. Don't confuse them. You do all of the karmas asakta, not being attached, but you do all of them, you know, as an encouragement. You do it, but your behavior is an encouragement for the others, and it helps them to gain that antakarma shuddhi, and eventually to gain, you know, exactly what you have, to gain that freedom. And so, respect them all. Om Tat Sat.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om